Geography. Free space for geography. Extending teaching and learning methods beyond the boundaries of campus.
Did you hear about Frontline?
Frontline,
by the way, has outstanding productions.
Geography Frontline.
Hey frontliners, how's it going? After some rain over the last days, the sun is finally back in Austin. Hey, and South by Southwest just started, this huge music festival. That's absolutely amazing being here now. So, yesterday, I looked up some stories on the internet and stumbled over one thing that for sure is of relevance for us. And this is Mercator's 500th birthday on March 5th. Who? So to make sure that you know who this guy was and what his work is all about, let's start episode 121 of Geography Frontline with a travel back in time to the 16th century. And today's topic, Mercator. In 1512, a child is born in today's Belgium named Gerhard Kremer. In the age of 7, Gerhard still lived with his parents, while Magellan set sail to explore the oceans. 3 years later, Magellan finishes his trip around the world and so proving the Earth is a globe. But coming back to Gerhard Kremer, in Latin, his name Kremer is Mercator, merchant. And he enters Leuven University. And afterwards works in map making. Now we jump forward to 1522. He moves to Duisburg. That's in Germany today. So what happens around 1522 in Europe? Do you have any idea? 1522, mid of the 16th century. So, because we don't have to talk about the United States in the 16th century, right? So we have Martin Luther. He's working on a German version of the Holy Bible, and Hadrian the Sixth is named Pope. Well, that's kind of interesting because that actually is the last German Pope before the current one, Benedict XVI. So Mercator produces globes and maps all his life, basically. And in the age of 57, this is 1569 by then, he publishes his famous world map. So, and what is so special about this world map? Do you have any idea? You should have talked about this in class, really. It's a map that is equal of angle. So let's take a look at the Mercator projection. It's a cylindrical map projection. And do you recall what a cylindrical map projection is? Try to think of it as a ball. Okay, not a football, but let's say a baseball or basketball. So, and if you take a piece of paper and lay it around the ball like a pipe, you get the picture, right? So then you end up with something that looks like the start for the cylindrical map projection, because then where the paper touches the ball, there is the equator. You would sketch that in. And if you look into the pipe at both ends, you look at the north or the south pole. And to achieve equal angles on the map, there is a lot of stretching going on this Mercator projection. So let's read a quote from Wikipedia here. Meridians of longitude are vertical on the map, and therefore all parallels of latitude are equally long on the map. Even though on the globe, parallels of latitude that are farther from the equator are shorter, right? Yeah, that makes sense. And so, because you have a plane map, all parallels of latitude have to be stretched to equator's length. But if you stretch horizontal, you also want to stretch vertical, right? Otherwise, your angles get messed up, and you don't want that. So Wikipedia adds, this stretching in a horizontal direction then necessitates stretching in a vertical direction in order that bearings not be distorted. Consequently, the scale is different at locations remote from the equator from what appears at the equator. In other words, the closer you come to the poles, the bigger is everything. That's why Greenland, for example, appears to be bigger than South America. Totally wrong, but true in the Mercator projection. So to sum it up, why is the Mercator projection any good if the whole world is deformed like this? It's really useful for navigation. Sailing. Let's read about it from the website, where is it? The Esri blog, right? And there they say, navigators who used a magnetic compass immediately saw the advantage of plotting courses on the Mercator projection, since any straight line they drew would be a line of constant bearing. This meant they could plot a course on the map and simply maintain the associated bearing during passage to arrive at the plotted location. You can imagine how navigators would prefer a map on which compass bearings would appear as straight rhomb lines. The Mercator projection has been used ever since for nautical charts, such as small-scale piloting charts of the oceans. The large-scale nautical charts used for coastal navigation can be thought of as small rectangles cut out of a world map that uses the Mercator projection. Makes sense, right? So if you're interested in reading more about it, about the Mercator projection, take a look at today's show notes. I also posted a video. I think it's a link to a video series from BBC4 in 14 parts about map making. That's quite interesting. So nice storytelling, by the way. And the show notes can be found on the website of today's episode or in the ID3 tags of the MP3 file. And I'll post the show notes on our Facebook wall. Sure. This is a section of the show where we take a look at our Facebook page. Everything relevant in a geographic sense can be posted here on Frontline on Facebook. This week, I wanted to let you know that our Facebook page has changed its look quite a bit. We use Facebook's timeline feature. It'll actually be mandatory in a few weeks, so I decided to switch to it now. Yeah. So you still have the chance to post interesting stuff here. Yeah, sure. And it would be great if you would actually do that more often, frontliners. I try to post something at least every 2 days. And if you follow the Facebook page, you see that. Links about the show, related videos, and so on. Yeah. So please go ahead and comment, share, and contribute to the Facebook page of Frontline. And that's really the easiest way of getting the new topics and thoughts out. So, what do you think about the new Facebook look? I think it's I don't know. Actually, I don't know. What I like about it is the big picture at the top and all the comments being in two columns now, left and right, and the latest posts on the left and then switching to the right and left again. I don't know if I like that so much, but the picture at the top is pretty nice. And by the way, now that should always be the logo of the latest Frontline episode. So make sure to check out Frontline on Facebook. That's facebook.com/geocafree. Well, and I need some music now. I don't know. What about you? This is a song from a band called Rocket Ship Park. I couldn't find it on iTunes, actually, but it's a great song. And it matches our mapping topic. Name of the song? Spinning Globes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Rocket Ship Park with their song Spinning Globes from the Podsafe Music Network. You'll find that on music.mevio.com. The link to the band's page on iTunes for the US and the German iTunes store are in the show notes, and I also post the link to their Facebook page, because they have a Facebook page too, and that's pretty cool. So you could like them if you wanted to.
What's that sound?
So let's talk about sound for a second. If you're new to the show, then this section might sound a little strange for you. Well, why should I make a guess what sound this is? Good question. Well, the idea behind what's that sound really is that there are more than visual impacts that shape our perception of the world. Other senses, like sound, also play an important role, but as we live in a visual society, sound is something we often don't pay too much attention to, right? And this is why we have this section of the show. You can only recognize something you're familiar with. And by sensitizing ourselves to urban sounds, this might make us more aware of what sounds are around us every day. So, couldn't be too bad for a geographer who goes out and does empirical research, right? To know what's around him or her. So last week, nobody had any idea what source could create such a sound. That's why we'll just stick with this sound riddle again and ask again, what's that sound? So send your guesses to comment@geocafree.com. Call the Geocafree voicemail to leave an audio comment using your Skype account. Skype name is Geocafree. Or post your thoughts on this week's sound riddle on our Facebook wall. And I would love to get some good guesses this time. Really. Last week we talked about hydraulic fracturing. Remember? This is a technique to set free gas or oil found in firm rock formations deep underground. And by pumping in some liquid to actually fracture the rock. And we also did a quick vote on the topic, asking hydraulic fracturing, A, is a way towards energy independence, B, is a profitable investment, C, is a huge environmental risk, or D, another opinion. And 100% of the frontliners decided to vote for answer C, that hydraulic fracturing is a huge environmental risk. I have to say that our quick vote could be used by more listeners, really. It's so simple. You just click on the quick vote link I'm posting on Facebook or the drop-down menu you find on today's episode's website on geocafree.com, and with a single click, you can state your opinion. So I really hope that the quick vote, as well as the general feedback, will get more participation. Frontline really needs that, really. I need that. Frontliners, send me some feedback, please. So for this week, I'd like to stay with the same question. Because I think that hydraulic fracturing is really interesting for us. And it's interesting to take a closer look. And so I'll ask you again. Hydraulic fracturing, A, is a way towards energy independence. Answer B, is a profitable investment. Answer C, hydraulic fracturing is a huge environmental risk. Or answer D, hydraulic fracturing. There, I have another opinion. And if you should have another opinion, please go ahead and add a comment to the quick vote and let us know what this other opinion is. After you've voted and you get to see the current results, you can add a comment in the same browser window, and that's really easy. And just go ahead and do that. Or if you voted for just A, B, or C, just want to specify or comment on why you voted for A, B, or C, add a comment and let us know what you're thinking about it, and maybe this can start the next discussion. kind of a feeling, if I'm looking at the time now, that this is going to be not the longest episode ever produced for Geography Frontline, but whatever. Doesn't hurt to have a short one once in a while. So it's time again to take a look into Alexander von Humboldt's diary. One of the first geographers, really. You could say, who traveled the Americas at the end of the 18th century. So now we're taking a leap forward if we're still in Mercator time, but yeah, it's about 200 years ago, more than 200 ago, that Alexander von Humboldt traveled the Americas. Last week, he was still on the ocean and talking about the strange experience of the southern hemisphere, of the sky at night. Do you remember that? Yeah, it was nice, right? When I was talking about seeing the Southern Cross and what he felt while looking at it and so on. Well, this week he reaches the first American islands, and so let's start reading for a second. At the setting of the moon, the sky was covered with clouds, the wind freshened anew, and the rain descended in one of those torrents peculiar to the torrid zone. The melody which had broken out on board the Pizarro had made rapid progress from the time when we approached the coast of Terra Firma, but having then almost reached the end of our voyage, we flattered ourselves that all who were sick would be restored to health, and as soon as we could land them at the island of Santa Margareta, or the port of Cumana, places remarkable for their great salubrity. And, this mallet he's describing here is actually so bad that they have to land at Cumana. Some people die within just 3 or 4 days or so. And then he says, and I think that's a really remarkable comment in his diary, he says, "The resolution we formed during the night of the 14th of July had a happy influence on the direction of our travels. For instead of a few weeks, we remained a whole year in this part of the continent. Had not the fever broken out on board the Pizarro, we should never have reached the Orinoco, the Cassiquiare, or even the limits of the Portuguese possessions on the Rio Negro. To this direction given to our travels, we were perhaps also indebted for the good health we enjoyed during so long and abroad in these equinoctial regions." And I think, as I said it before, this is a nice example of how empirical research can be twisted sometimes. It's really great. So just try to imagine the situation, right? People get sick. They're on board. They want to go to South America first and explore, have all their roadmap planned out, everything is set, and what they want to do, what month and whatsoever. And then people get sick, start dying. Wow. And so you have to make a stop. Just change your plans. And then you discover something that's really interesting and perfect for your research. And your focus switches. And I have to say, I had kind of a similar experience. Not people dying, but I was on a field trip in Malta last year. And I wanted to do research about the island's role as an EU member state, because Malta is EU member state since 2004. And so I wanted to see what changed now and what the society, what people would feel, think about it, and so on. But the day after I arrived in Malta, about 800 illegal migrants from Africa came to the island. Yeah. And so I immediately switched my research focus from EU to the influx of migrants. And this was, I think this was really a coincidence and perfect. Like a little wonder doing empirical research. Because normally, if you going out as a geographer doing research in the field, that's nothing that is really so breaking news, right? That was really amazing. So I'll just stop here reading from Humboldt's diary and let you think about that. What new findings were maybe only found because of some change on the road, something happening, like people getting sick or, I don't know, missing a plane or whatever. And maybe you want to comment on that. So feel free to send your thoughts to comment@geography.com or send a voicemail or just post something on the Facebook wall. The announcements for episode 121 of Geography Frontline. This week, it's about a conference titled Highly Skilled Migration in the 21st Century. And this conference is taking place from 24th to 25th of May at the Middlesex University in London, Great Britain. And on their website, they say, research in the field of migration has tended to focus on the multifarious international diasporas of the poor and the powerless. Taking important new research in the field of intra-European highly skilled migration as its launching point. And now they citing a title from Mulholland and Ryan, French Capital, a study of French highly skilled migrants in London's financial and business sectors. This conference will provide a forum for international researchers to share, review, and debate new empirical and theoretical developments in the field of international and inter-European highly skilled migration. In particular, it will concern itself with exploring the interplay between the economic, socio-cultural, spatial, and life cycle dynamics shaping this under-researched field of human mobility. I think that sounds really interesting. And I'm thinking about my Malta story I just told you. Maybe I should try to go there. Well, anyways, this is it. Episode 121 has come to an end. I hope you really enjoyed our talk about Mercator, Humboldt, and everything else. And if you've long planned to send in feedback, just do it this week. Your comments are really important and are highly appreciated. Have a great week, frontliners. And say it with me now, the network is us.